Right. But when were you shipped over to Europe, and how did you get there? When was that?
We were combat ready December of 1943. Shipped over from the Virginia area and landed directly in Italy in January of 1944.
So how was the ship ride?
Well, it was interesting because they did a lot of twisting and turning. It was a slow ride avoiding the German submarines that were very active throughout that area at the time. And so it took several days to get over there in the troop ships that were moving the troops at that time.
So when was the first time you saw a Mustang? When you arrived in Italy, what were you expecting to fly?
Well, things get interesting when you look at the history, because I say the 99th was told they ought to do some patrol work. 332nd Fighter Group was combat ready in the P-40, and they said, oh, you are going to do some patrol work. And we switched before leaving the States to the P-39 Bell Air Cobra. We patrolled Naples Harbor and the waterways to the Anzio beachhead at the same time. The 99th, after they had moved out of Sicily into Italy, were doing the interdiction and ground support. And really, it was over the Anzio beachhead that they shot down in a few days' time over a dozen German aircraft. So it was a matter of opportunity. But shortly after that, the 332nd Fighter Group was one of four groups picked to begin the escort work to protect American lives, because every bomber that was lost on the missions meant 10, usually 10 American lives, and that's why the escort work began.
Right. So when did they bring in the Mustangs?
The Mustang came, when we started the escort work in the spring of 44, we had the P-47 Thunderbolt. 1st of July, all four squadrons were flying the P-51 Mustang.
Now, when did the red tail business start? Where did that come from, and what was it?
Because I was there before George.
The red tail was really the fact that the 15th Air Force assigned colors to the tails of each squadron. Yeah. And our rudder was supposed to be painted red. Instead, we painted the whole rear end red and became known as a red tail. Yeah. But all of the airplanes had on their rudder a different color. So you could
Was that by find squadron? Them in the air.
Well, by groups.
The key was that the 15th Air Force wanted the bombing groups to know that these aircraft suddenly showing up are there for protection, not German. So one group had a yellow tail, one had candy stripe, red, white, one had checkerboard. 332nd Fighter Group, red tail.
Right.
And it's if you got involved in combat or something, once you started to form up, you could see at a distance who your squadron mates were and join up.
Right.
And that was one thing. Yeah. But the spinners of all 15th Air Force planes were all red also. So.
Yeah. I might say for the folks that are interested, if you notice here, red nose, red tail, but look behind the spinner, orange and red stripes here, yellow and the orange or yellow, whichever one you call it, trim tab. We ended up with four squadrons, and the crew chief needed to know what aircraft is landing to be prepared to take care of them. So what's happened behind the spinner and on the trim tabs allowed the crew chief to be prepared to marshal on in. We had pier steel plank runway, tent city on each side the end of the runway. That was for their identification. What you see here happens to be the 302nd Squadron, the one that I was in. We had the yellow and red trim stripes.
We heard red tails, and we in the movie applied, it sounded like only to the fighters. But the red tails applied also, right, to your bombers or not?
No. Just the fighters.
Just the fighters. So that's why we say when you're just talking about red tails, you're only talking half of the outfit. The bombers didn't get into combat, but they really fought what the Pittsburgh Courier called double victory. We were fighting against victory against Hitler in Europe. We were fighting against racism here at home. and 101 of the officers of the bomb group actually were incarcerated for a period because the commander wanted to maintain segregation, although the Army had already said it should end.
And the Red Tails did not apply to the 99th Fighter Squadron when they were flying P-40s. Because the Red Tails was assigned by the 15th Air Force. The 99th was in the 12th Air Force. And when we got to the 15th Air Force escorting bombers, the 15th Air Force assigned the color. Yeah. And that's when we started the Red Tails.
So when you were up escorting our bombers, to what extent did the bomber crews know that the Red Tails were Negro pilots?
Most of them did not know. Many of them didn't even know until well after the war. There was one squadron or small group that, due to weather, landed at our base in Ramatelli and for a few days before they could get back home. But that word did not spread. Segregation had gone overseas and was pretty well maintained. We did not go to the Isle of Capri to the officers' rest camp. We had our own camp in Naples and that type of thing.
So most of those bomber crews, even on the same base, didn't know that they were being protected by colored fighter pilots.
That's what many didn't know until after the war.
Wow. Is there any way, real way you can really prepare for your first combat experience?
Prepare for it?
Yeah, how?
No, they just sent you on the first mission, and that was it.
Well, I mean mentally, emotionally, for you.
Training was good. I've often had youngsters say, were you scared? And I said, if you're scared, you're in the wrong business.
Yeah,
but we had excellent training, and so it was a matter of carrying that out, whatever your assignment may be.
Describe one of your escort missions. What were they like?
Well, the escort missions were, they were long to start with, and that's the reason I didn't go as long one as most of them. Like the mission to Berlin, I wasn't on that. That was the longest one we flew.
Right.
But I flew as a wingman. I was a second lieutenant and flew as a wingman on that. And my job on a wingman, in a flight of four, you have the flight leader and the element leader. And the wingman, their job is to protect that plane. If he goes after a fighter or something, you stay behind him to make sure no one gets on his tail. That's the job of the wingman, and that's how you learn what to do in combat.
Yeah.
So you both survived World War II,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And move on with a few years. You decide to stay on active duty, Charles, and on to Korea.
Yes.
So what were you flying in Korea?
I'd gotten over a couple of assignments in the States and ended up in the Philippines when the war broke out. And they grabbed P-51 pilots wherever you were because we didn't have our jets in place at that time. And two squadrons that had flown the 51 but had turned them over to the Philippine Air Force, they were flying F-80s. Two squadrons of the group there were immediately shipped up to Japan where they had 51s in storage and got so my flash. Last flight in Europe was November 1950. I'm going down the runway in Japan in the 51 again, and we flew missions out of Japan while they built the first strip inside Pusan perimeter.
Wow. And George, you left active duty and came back on, right?
I got out in 46, went to NYU for 1 year.
Right.
And returned to active duty in June of 48.
So what did you do when you were back on active duty?
Well, when I came
Korea?
Back on active duty, I signed in January of 48. I decided to go back on active duty. But Lockburner said, I'll go back if you can let me finish that semester at NYU. So he said, okay, I'll report in June. But in April, the United States Air Force announced they were going to do away with racial segregation. And that caused me to think more about going back on active duty. So I figured when I went back on active duty, I've got to fly. But if I can't fly, I don't want a desk job. If I had a desk job, it's got to be in maintenance around airplanes. Yeah. So I decided when I go back, I'll go into maintenance. What can I do? I know nothing about engines. In fact, when I finished flying, I had never driven an automobile. So I didn't know anything about engines and things like that. So I decided to go into electronics because when segregation took place, integration, I wanted to fly the all-weather fighters, and I knew they had radar. So I asked to go to radar school, and they approved it, and I went there in September 50 for 50 weeks and came out knowing everything about radar, how to operate it and how to repair it, things like that, and I became a maintenance officer.
So, and you were in, but you went to Korea, yeah?
Well, what happened was racial integration took place in the end of June 1949. The 332nd was deactivated, and within weeks, everyone at Lockburn received orders, Air Force bases all around the world. Well, I was still in school. I graduated in August, and I was shipped to the 19th Bomb Group on Guam as a maintenance officer, a B-29 outfit. And so I supervised the maintenance of electronics and long-range navigation equipment, but as a pilot. So I demonstrated I could fly the B-29. So in 1950, I was put on a flight crew, combat crew, and I flew that. I still had my day job, but I flew as a co-pilot. And when the Korean War started, we moved from Guam to Okinawa and started flying out of there.
But the lesson, never give up your day job.
That's right.
Well, I had somewhat the same experience because just before integration, they said you need to do something else but fly, besides fly. And I also chose to go to weather school until I went to the maintenance course, officer's course, and also, like George, much of my career then, although I actively flew 27 of my 30 years, many of my assignments were in the materiel and maintenance support